Welcome back to the Talos of Tech Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. We're going back to the OG days because it's your original hosts for today, me and Nick. For those who don't know,
OGs, man, this is some OG vibes here. This throwing me back to 2017, where it was Nick and Drew talking about the world's most important topics, like HDMI 2.1, and just all
which
of
is the, not on the new MacBook Pro.
Still not on the new MacBook Pros.
So it's relevant.
It is still relevant. Yeah. We were ahead of the curve back then. Good to see you, Drew. Happy Turkey Day.
Good to
Happy
see you.
Black Friday. Happy spend all of your money and rack up a ton of credit card debt day for marginally discounted items that are overly promoted. What did you get
with inflated
today?
Retail prices? We take all the retail prices, raise them 30%, and then advertise them for being 25% off. I looked around, actually. I was curious. I was checking different websites for Black Friday deals. Everyone was bragging about Black Friday, and I realized that nothing looks good. Did you find anything? I'm at a loss for good deals.
I mean, some dude in a back alley was trying to sell me one of those ugly 14-inch MacBook Pros for $30, and I decided it wasn't worth it. So,
$30, maybe 10.
Maybe I could have 30. Like 30 is like double, so I probably could have done like 15 or so. But
that's fair. He didn't want to negotiate then.
No, he wasn't. He was like, "It's already a good deal. It's only, you know, we'll being tracked by the FBI for multiple reasons."
We finally got that dang Randy off the show.
I know.
Can go back to our roots now. But so you found nothing good for Black Friday then?
My goal typically with Black Fridays is to avoid all of the marketing hype, because that's all Black Friday is. Let's be completely honest here. It's literally just a day that everyone, all of the big companies decided, we're going to market the heck out of this day and make it a holiday. And what does this holiday include? Buying marginally discounted products that are over-advertised. My goal is to never buy anything on Black Friday if I can avoid it. Sometimes there's a good deal, you know, of something that I was already going to buy that, you know, is now, you know, marginally cheaper. I haven't bought anything today. Not going to. I did check Best Buy and Amazon real quick just to see if, you know, a Tesla Model Y was on sale, but I didn't see one. So unfortunately, we're not getting one.
I think Tesla has surge pricing for Black Friday. You can pay 10 to 20% more just today. We'll just raise our prices. But yeah, I guess everyone else on the podcast today is busy for family reasons or whatnot. We're just
family.
We have our priorities straight. And we're focusing on the tech podcast.
The show. We make the show every week, unless it's inconvenient, and in which case we don't do it. But we're here this week.
True.
We're doing it. And this is the Black Friday show, which is actually going to go out on not Black Friday,
Saturday.
But whatever color Saturday is. What color is Saturday?
Green Blue? Saturday, because we Green saved our Saturday. Money. We didn't lose anything. I'm also just not in the market for anything, is what I realized. Actually, the closest I got to buying something was I looked around. This is a guilty desire I have.
Which Android
that
phone did
I'm
you
embarrassed
buy?
To say. No, it's still Apple, but I'm still embarrassed. I was looking for deals on AirPods Max. Just because I know the sound quality and the noise cancellation and stuff is all good. And they are very comfortable. And I like the way they look. But I still hate the case, the charging, and the price. So I was willing to see how much price drops there were. And nothing was looking very good to me. At least from Best Buy and Amazon and all that. Like, I thought maybe they were recommendable at $399. And no one was selling them like new at that price. You could get them open box for close to that, but they were usually in the fair condition. They were not listed as excellent. So I even looked around on like local marketplaces and stuff, and there were a few people selling AirPods Max for $350. And I was like,
No, don't do it.
No, I didn't.
I would have to say I also have a similar guilty pleasure. I've been guilty of looking at AirPods Max on occasion. But what keeps getting me, even when I find them at a good price, like, you know, $390, $350, in that range.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's the price that I remember saying that I'd get them at. But you have to remember, these are now a year old. Like,
that's true.
It's like,
has it been a year mid-cycle already?
Mid-cycle. It has been. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
December, I think. So, got a couple weeks
We left, are mid-cycle.
Yeah. I don't know how frequently they're going to get refreshed. I mean, they could stick around for the next 5 years. Who knows? But
that's possible. It's
just like, yeah. But version 2 in 2038 is going to have lightning still.
Right. It could be another HomePod where they announce it and then forget about it and then replace it with something far better and cheaper.
In which case, if you were going to get a HomePod, now is the best time to get a HomePod because they're extra cheap because they've been discontinued and no one wants them. Because
that's
HomePod
true.
Minis come in colors.
Right. Yeah, how's your smart home experience been? How is that ecosystem working for you? Is it a bunch of stuff you planned on using and are now not using? Or are you utilizing all of it?
I am extremely disappointed in smart home accessories in general. And I only have one. it's the thermostat that's right behind me. It is the Ecobee 3 thermostat, I think. It's not Thread. That's the problem. And of course the trash truck decides to empty the dumpster right now. Thank you, Mr. Trash Truck, for all you people listening and wondering what the heck's going on outside. Yeah, it's Trash Truck.
He's dumping all the AirPods Maxes into the garbage.
I mean, that's where they belong. All those Android phones and TVs that everyone just replaced today. That's the other thing. Why does everyone buy a TV on Black Friday? I don't understand. How many TVs do you need? Like,
they're convinced it's a deal. But yeah, all of the friends, we got together with some friends and everyone was just on their phones looking at Black Friday deals. And everyone was just looking at TVs. And everyone already has a TV is the thing. Like,
exactly.
Everyone. There's so many of them. And there's so many people that are like, well, maybe I could get a bigger one or I could get that frame TV or whatnot.
Why? Anyway.
They're just trying to justify it, but yeah. Go ahead.
Smart home stuff. The problem seems to be it's not a Thread accessory, and there aren't many Thread accessories. From what I've heard, I don't own a Thread accessory at the moment. I guess all my HomePod minis are on a Thread network, so I guess there is one.
Mm-hmm.
And those do work pretty well. You know, I can tell one HomePod to start playing music in the other room, and it works pretty quickly.
Good.
But the thermostat keeps disconnecting from my Wi-Fi network, and it is the most frustrating thing ever when it's 2 in the morning, it's 1,010 degrees because your thermostat now can't connect to the internet, and you're standing next to your wall trying to make it reconnect to your internet, and you have to enter the password, and it's like, sorry, I couldn't find the thermostat. And it's like you're sweating, and it's like, just turn on the AC, please. Anyway.
Right.
I basically
Is it one of those things that smartness has ruined, like it did
exactly.
something that didn't need to be fixed.
it is nice to have a schedule, like I can have it turn off in the morning and then be off all day and then turn on right before I get home. Like that is kind of nice, and that is the reason why I've kept it around and haven't ripped the thing off the wall yet, but it was close a couple times. But yeah, it's almost like the smart home stuff is more work than it should be. Like,
that's how I feel about it.
It
makes life simpler, but you have to work a lot harder to get to the point of it being simpler.
And then when things break, it's not as simple as turning off the light switch, unscrewing the light bulb, and screwing in a new one, because it's literally the only thing that goes wrong on a typical light switch. It's like, oh, I got to connect this to the internet. And I think part of the problem was I was trying to use the Home app to control the thermostat. And when you use the Home app to control the thermostat instead of the Ecobee app, if the Ecobee gets kicked off the internet, it doesn't do anything else. It just dies. It's like, off. We're going to turn off. And it's like,
I don't know what to do. Shut everything off.
Exactly. And so then you're melting. So I'm using the Ecobee app to control it. And then I'm like, I'm using an app to control my thermostat. And then if I get like Nano Leaf lights, I'll probably be getting, you know, the Nano Leaf or the Philips Hue app, and it's like, I don't want 80 apps on my phone to control everything. That's what the Home app was supposed to do, but the Home app doesn't actually work because this whole thing is broken. And so because of this bad experience with the thermostat, I've decided I'm not going to be getting any more smart home accessories anytime soon.
Me too.
There's some amazing deal on something.
I'm in the same boat.
It's not worth it. It's totally not worth it. It's way too much work. I mean, it sounds great on paper, right? And they make the cool YouTube videos. I've watched plenty of those.
It all sounds
YouTube
impressive
videos.
When it's all working. Yeah.
And it is kind of cool to be able to, you know, from Starbase, be able to say, hey, turn on my AC and know that it's turning on. That's kind of cool. You know, be the same with lights or whatever accessories I added to it. But they don't work 100% of the time. I've never had a problem with a light switch not turning on unless the light bulb died. Like, literally never.
Or the power's out.
Or the power. Okay. But, like, whatever. It's not like I turn on the light switch and 9 times out of 10 it works, but there's always that 10% of the time that it doesn't work. Like, that doesn't happen. But I feel like with
the reliability rating is very low.
Instead of it being like 100%, it's like 98% reliable. And it's that 2% that are just super inconvenient. And you're like standing over your thermostat in the middle of the night, sweating to death, trying to figure out how to turn on the AC. And it's like, well, cannot connect to the internet. It's like,
like this. I'm trying to think of a term for it. Digital acrobatics of calling out to the assistant, hoping the assistant communicates with the home app, which communicates with the third party app. And then everything works. And hopefully it all works. And it's impressive when it does. But I've got into it in the past where I tried to make my whole home more digital controlled. And it just became so frustrating, especially if you ever change Wi-Fi settings.
Ooh.
It breaks everything. Like, all my security cameras, the light bulbs, they all need to be like completely factory reset, which you have to like switch them on and off 7 times to do and connect them with their first app to connect them to the home app, which is why it kind of ties into a subject I wanted to ask you about, because I ran a poll last week asking people, like, what would you be most interested in Apple entering, like a new industry that Apple's not in? So we're not talking iPhone 14 or, you know, MacBook Air M2 edition. We're talking like a new segment that they haven't been present in, because I felt like that was a popular subject on last week's podcast. And obviously there's a bunch of different options and I can only choose 4, but luckily it was pretty split. It wasn't like overwhelmingly one section one.
What were the results of that? I remember voting for a camera, but...
Oh, okay, cool. That was my vote too, just because I would use it, and
I'd love cameras way too much. They're too
I use cameras, and I think they could solve a lot of problems if Apple entered that space. But the results were fairly interesting. Over 1,500 people voted, so thank you for voting. 32% was at the lead, so even the largest, most popular option was less than a third, and that was smart home appliances. People want Apple to make their own switches or thermostats or they used to make routers, didn't they? The airport
capsule? Routers. Yeah, those were good routers.
A lot of people, I remember being mad that they stopped doing that.
I'm still mad they got rid of them. I never owned one, but I had set one up for my grandpa once, and it was just so cool that, like, it was an Apple-branded router that was, like, intelligent. And this was before Eero's, right? And so it was just, cool to... Or, you know, mesh networks in general. It's just cool.
And didn't they have drives on them?
Yeah. So he had an Airport Extreme that had like a 2 terabyte. I don't know. Maybe it wasn't 2 terabytes at the time. A large for whatever time period, maybe 200 gigs. I can't remember what we considered large at the time.
I think there was a 2 terabyte.
Was there?
If I remember correctly. It probably wasn't. I'm sure it wasn't an SSD, but yeah.
No, it was not. It made noises. But basically, it was like a time machine backup, a Wi-Fi-based time machine backup. So I remember setting that up for him, and I was like, this is now your Wi-Fi and your hard drive to back it up. And he was like, wow, that's so cool. And like other people I knew had like figured out how to put like movies on it and have it like accessible from your Apple TV as like a local. This was again back before internet speeds were really fast. So having like a local video library was, you know, more helpful than not to be able to watch the latest Pixar movie.
Yeah. No, my friends had one and they did that same thing. They stored a bunch of family videos and pictures on it so that everyone in the house could access it, which I was like, this is kind of cool. And I was always confused when Apple announced they weren't making them anymore and they got rid of them. I was like, must have just been low volume, must have been not enough people. But I do have to agree that if Apple wanted to get serious about the smart home, making their own hardware would be the way to do it, because they've got that whole connect and attach to your Apple ID thing pretty down AirPods.
Very down. AirTags.
Or AirTags, yeah. Or when you set up an Apple TV.
The new wallets, the new Apple MagSafe.
Oh,
wallets.
Right. Yeah.
Your wallet is attached to your Apple ID. What?
That was confusing. I didn't understand what that was. People were like, the new MagSafe wallet supports Find My. And I was like,
but it's not AirTags. There's Find not. My.
It's not like it has electronics in it. There's no battery.
Well, there's a passive NFC chip in it, like there is currently, that does the colors when you attach it and detach it.
Yeah. But well, that's what someone explained to me, is that the old wallet just was a tag to say, play this animation and nothing else. Mm-hmm. It didn't know what it was. So they had to update the wallet so that it could tell the phone that you were attaching a wallet instead of just any other case. So that tiny change warranted an upgrade, which is...
Oh, yes.
I guess it works. You know when it disconnects, so you can track it down.
I've never tried it, but I saw people talk about it.
Yeah. It's kind of an interesting approach, but yeah. I guess back to the poll... Second place at 25% was phone cellular service, which I know we've talked about a lot. Apple making their own carrier, which in my view could save a lot of headaches if you didn't have to worry about going through Verizon or AT&T all the time and you just knew it's Apple's carrier. They could get rid of the name at the top and just have the antenna
so minimal.
Bars. Even
just
more
have an
minimal.
Apple logo.
Ooh.
Just a very
that
know,
could
small
work.
Apple logo.
You're connected on Apple. So it'd be all eSIM. So you just unbox the phone and it's already working and it's all billed. All that's
on
taken
your Apple
care of.
Card and you get 3% cash back. And
That's right. You could get privileges if you're on Apple Card. And then third place was dedicated cameras, which disappointed me. 24%. I wanted that to be number one. Ironically, at 19% at last, VR headset. So... People are not terribly into the headset stuff, I guess, despite all of these rumors growing and growing. Quo was just talking about it again, saying it's supposed to have like Mac-like performance and it'll come out end of next year. And in 10 years, it'll replace the phone. And I was like,
oh, wow,
that's not going to happen. I'm sorry. I'll put that out on the record. There are too many things a phone is used for that a headset just fundamentally I don't believe can replace.
And
even
I can't
if it was
wait
glasses.
To take selfies with my headset.
Right? What do you do? Take the glasses off?
No. It has like a little telescoping camera thing that just like goes out. It's like a selfie stick and then takes a picture of you wearing the goggles. It's, super
you have this
super
big
postable.
Handle going all
They're
the way back.
They're going to use the Face ID sensor to restitch on an emoji on your face, ignoring the goggles. It'll just auto-delete the goggles.
You won't need to take pictures of your face anymore. You'll just have memojis of everything that can erase all of the ugly headwear that you're putting on. But yeah, what we're doing right now is a good example. How you do a normal FaceTime call with AR headsets, I'm trying to figure that out. Is it going to be all in the metaverse so we don't need our faces anymore? It'll just... Wait, I don't even think glasses and a headset can do facial tracking. It can sit on your face, but it can't.
I mean, they'll put like little like a sensor attachments, like with a little sticker and like a little wire.
Oh, right.
And then you'll just all be
like Andy Serkis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or just like the little dots. It'll be like a VFX motion capture system. And
then, yeah.
Yeah. We can all be targeted.
They'll find a way, right? And we won't need keyboards anymore for typing or texting people.
We'll just think that.
We're going to reach out and grab everything.
I don't want to have a VR headset. I want to use my smartphone. If I can't click it, what's the point?
What's the point? No, but I do think there is something to that. As I consider myself a futurist, and I'm willing to get on to new standards, and I'm willing to... adapt to the new thing or the new port or the new connection and whatnot, but
as long as
I still
USB-C.
Like struggle to see. Wait, what?
As long as that new port and connection is USB-C.
Yes, as long as it's Type C. Well, is there a newer port than that? Like shape
HDMI 2.1.
Well, that's not a new shape, though. It's just a new standard. Is there a new... I guess MagSafe 3 is new.
Can we call it a new standard if we were talking about it in 2017?
Well, the shape is from... Man, HDMI has been around a long time. It's just they've beefed up HDMI.
Yeah.
But I'm like thinking of the type of everyday tasks you use a phone for that a pair of glasses would have such a hard time emulating.
Mm-hmm.
Like people just showing someone something on your phone. As simple as like, oh, look at this. And you hold the phone out and they're like, oh, let me see that. Or let's all take a selfie. I've done that probably five times with all the Thanksgiving gatherings I've been having, is just getting everyone lined up in the picture, and they're always like, Drew, you take it, you have long arms, so I have to reach out so we can get everyone and take the photo. I would say that's not a techie argument. I would say that's a pretty average consumer.
Take the goggles off and then face the 3D tracking camera at you, and then you'll have this really obvious tan line where you've been wearing the goggles for like a year and a half. It'll be like your watch tan.
And how do you see what you're taking a picture of?
I don't know.
You just have to hope it looks
your
good.
Your Apple Watch.
You look at the watch. Oh, okay. Let's line this up. Yeah, good luck telling all the Zoomers how to use that feature.
Yeah.
These TikToks are going to be a lot harder with AR headset.
Totally.
Yeah. Set them up and back up and...
Exactly.
Do all that. They can't see what they look like. But smart home stuff, I could understand maybe if Apple thinks there's a market there because... They could probably do it better than anyone else could. I mean, I just like the idea of having first-party hardware that would connect so easily within the home app. Because I've experienced the same struggle you have of just trying to get the third-party hardware connecting with the iOS ecosystem, but you need a different app to actually use it and set it up. And they tried to bypass it. They were like, oh, now use this HomeKit QR code thing. And you can just pair it right away.
Which the Echo Bee has, you know, it has the little HomeKit QR code. Why you have to factory reset it to get it to reconnect to the Wi-Fi every time it drops off every couple weeks is unknown to me.
Yeah, you can't just go into settings and say, switch to this Wi-Fi now. It's like, oh, just reboot the entire thing because...
You can, but it doesn't actually connect. There's like, it's like a full little Android touchscreen thing on the wall. And absolutely terrible refresh rate, by the way. But you can go in. It has a little keyboard. You can enter in the password. And it's like, oh, can't connect.
I can't connect. You got to reboot. Yeah, so if Apple got into that field, they could probably do it better.
If Apple was going to start with the whole, you know, smart home thing, they need to come up with their own router system, their own Wi-Fi router combo. Because
they've already got the secure video thing through HomeKit.
Yeah, true.
So I would totally buy into Apple cameras, like security cameras or a doorbell or something around the house, because they could emphasize it's encrypted and it's private and it, you know, doesn't go to a server or anything. And on top of that, you don't have to have another password and another email. That's always like my driving force for Apple doing more stuff in-house, and why I'm always budging against people that are like, Apple's getting too big or they're competing with too many things. It's like, well, I don't think for the sake of like allowing more businesses, we should make every possible service and product have a separate email, separate password, a separate app, because... Remembering passwords is, I think, the greatest challenge our older generations are having with all this technology is, I forgot the password to this. So I put a huge emphasis in my view on, we need to find a way of getting the number of accounts and the number of businesses that one person needs access to down. Like, if there's a way to minimize all that, I'd say it's better. I guess that inspires monopoly concerns, but... I hate how much changes with all this stuff. Like, I just discovered Amazon doesn't sell the cloud cameras I use anymore. So they bought some other security company and now they're pushing that for everything. So what I have is considered vintage, and the app is still occasionally getting software updates, but it's still fairly buggy. And I was like, well, if I want to add more of these cloud cameras to my app that I'm using already, can I do that? And they're like, oh no, we don't make those anymore, so you have to find them like used. and try to connect them that way, or I have to buy a whole new cloud cam system in a different app to access those cameras, and those require a subscription. And the smart outlet I use for my string lights was also a company that either went bankrupt or changed their whole roadmap to the point now that I cannot set it up with HomeKit. So it's just blinking constantly, like waiting for pairing. Even though it has the HomeKit code, it won't connect to the Home app because it needs to be set up through its own app, and that its own app doesn't exist anymore. So that's what I'm hesitant about, all these, like, we should allow all these tinier third parties to, it's like, no, they're not doing very well. Let's just have one company offer all this. And I'd like an Apple router, a security system. If Apple started supporting switches or a thermostat, they would probably make it as simple and integrated as possible. And like you said, their own network that they can all communicate with. That's what the smart home needs to be worth my time. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't happen, I'm not interested. I'm giving up on this whole third-party ecosystem approach.
What if there's a fundamental flaw with the idea of a smart home? I know that's the idea we've been sold even back to the future in the 80s. You know, we all had they were like, oh, in 2015, you're going to be talking to your house. It's like, well, yeah, I can't talk to my house right now. But is it really a good idea? Because you think about software and technology and how fast that changes. And how that's much true. You update things, how fast things change. Like, heck, Amazon Fire Phone was just, 6 years ago? Like,
was it only six?
I don't know. 2015, wow. I think, is what
I recall
that being.
That feels ancient.
But maybe it was a little bit longer than that, right? But, like, things come and go so fast in the tech world, propped up by huge brands. You know, even the Apple wireless router system, you know, they nixed that eventually. You know, like, everything changes within 5 years. The problem is when you buy your home, you're not expecting
homes last to have a long to change. Time.
Yeah. If a home's last 50, 70, 80 years, depending on how you take care of them and you know where they are and how many tropical storms you live through or dam overreaches you live through
or fires
or fires, you know, just minor things like that. Aside from acts of God, houses last pretty long. And
yes, of all things we buy and hold on to, that's probably the highest.
Even longer than cars, you know? Like, houses last a long time. And the idea of me having to run around and keep updating things in my home is just not something I'm used to.
Yeah.
I've never had to, you know, replace... It goes back to the old argument, the subscription affliction argument of, you know, having to update your lamp to have it be compatible with your house's new software update. Like, it's that kind of thinking.
My lamp's outdated.
Literally. Yeah. I mean, that's literally what this leads to, right? When it's like, okay, so you want to update to your home OS to, you know, home OS 18.5, and you get this cool new feature, but now you're, you know, thermostat can't connect to it anymore. So now you need to go get a new thermostat. Okay. And then the next update, you know, maybe the light bulbs don't work, which, okay, fine. That's not very frequent, but those companies can go out of business just like you had experience with, you know, things break. And when things break in the physical analog world, it's, you know, typically a fairly easy fix. You know, if your thermostat breaks back, you know, with the old thermostat, it's like, what, 8 wires back there and like this little piece of metal that bends to detect the temperature. Like, it's like, and and then at the end of the day, those little boxes are like
so old.
$3 now. Like, it's literally very cheap and very easy to replace those things and get those serviced. And lots of people know how to service them. But when you have higher technology, you have a higher bar of being able to fix things. You know, you need a skilled technician to, you know, come out, and we have to sit on hold with a company for an hour and a half to get to their one technical support advisor who actually knows what the heck they're doing, which, by the way, those are very far and few between. I'm kind of, after trying out the whole home thing, I do appreciate the HomePod minis. I pretty much at this point just use them to play music throughout the house, which is nice. But other than that, I don't use them to control the thermostat anymore, and I have no interest in buying lights or anything else. So, or even like a I was thinking for a while, like, if I had a smart doorbell and a smart lock, then I could have the FedEx dude leave the packages inside. You know, that'd be great. But is it really worth $300 of hardware and then like having to finagle the whole thing for the occasional package drop? Well, no. Would it be nice? Yes. But no.
It's probably better for like new houses, you know, like that are being built.
I don't think so. So my argument would be that technology, you know, significantly changing every 5 years, you know, significant changes, like what iOS 10 was 5 years ago, like how different the operating system was back then, just how it actually functioned. Graphically, they look similar, but there's so much change that happens in the tech space, which is why we appreciate it. And that's why we don't run a what's the latest in the home building world show, because there isn't too much to talk about there. And you go, ooh, this insulation is slightly better now because of cool technology called asbestos. I was going to say that,
yeah. HVAC has changed a lot in the past few decades.
Yeah.
And those... The technology you need just to tap in, because I looked into it, like how would I hook up a smart thermostat to my wall heater, which is, you know, I'm pretty sure we weren't out of the World War when it was built. And it's using totally different wiring from what... I'm trying to remember. Was America a country? Yeah. That's how old it is. But it's using totally different wiring, probably, than your smart thermostat. Yeah. So there's all these different standards they're trying to adopt to. And you're right that homes are a very, very permanent thing relative to technology, which is almost polar opposite. So, yeah, it's difficult to adapt to that. I just feel like Apple probably has the best chance at introducing a new standard and supporting it for a long time. Occasionally you get your 3D touches or your touch bars or your AirPort Extremes. But for the most part, like when they announce something in a new network that they're going to like the Find My network or that kind of thing, if they sustain it for a long time, Apple's pretty good at providing, you know, the latest update for an extended period, like iPads getting software updates for 7-8 years. Or Macs getting updates for 8 years.
I would trust Apple over just about any other company as far as having update sustainability. However, it's like you need to have almost unlimited money and unlimited patience to make the smart home really work. Like there are a few YouTube channels out there that I have watched, you know, trying to figure out this whole smart home thing, where like they have like their pantry decked out with like a colored light bulb and a sensor that like, you know, does like disco party colors. And it's like, that's cool. Yeah. That's very cool. I wish I had that at my house.
Or they have to build servers.
Yeah.
To connect everything.
And it's like, I don't have A, the patience, or B, the resources to be dropping $350 on a lighting setup for my pantry. It's like, why? And it's impressive that they can do it and it's cool, but it's not very practical. And
you do it for the video.
You do just. I'm sure that's pretty much why they're doing it. I mean,
they can justify the cost.
just the small amount of hassle I've had with the one HomeKit accessory that I've had. I don't want to imagine how that guy's full time job must be walking around his house like fixing every smart accessory.
It keeps like, breaking all day.
It's like I gotta fix the light bulb in this room, and then the garbage disposal doesn't work anymore, so I gotta go type the Wi-Fi password into that one, and it's like. You can't keep up with that. You know, obviously you can, but
you're right.
It's not worth it to me.
I imagine too the market is not incredibly large, which is probably why Apple doesn't want to jump into it, is they don't see much.
And they'd totally dominated income if they jumped into it, right? Like
I think they would.
Yeah.
It would be another
be an AirTag situation.
Nail in the ecosystem, you know. If you were like, well, if you like this house, I love it. Well, it's compatible with Apple's HomeKit, but not Google Home. So you need to have an iPhone if you want to buy this place. You know, people would be like, okay, I guess I'll get an iPhone or something like that. or the fanboys will say.
I kind of wonder what happens to like the average person who does get a few smart home accessories that are only compatible with HomeKit, you know, has their AirPods, has their Apple Watch, and then one day they just decide, yeah, I want to switch to Android. I haven't tried this before. And they have like no idea how much of their ecosystem is going to break by getting an Android. They're like, well, wait, my watch doesn't pair with my Android? Isn't it just Bluetooth? What do you mean my AirPods? Yeah. I have to go into the settings and connect to them every time? Wait, I can't turn on my light bulbs anymore? What's going on here?
Like, yep. This is the wall in the garden.
I know. This is and the wall. I just wonder how many people actually do that, though, every year. They walk into the Verizon store and the Verizon dude's like, ooh, get this new See It Folds. Ooh, isn't this cool? It's so cool. I'm like, oh, wow, that is pretty cool. Let's get that one instead of an iPhone this year. And then just wandering around the rest of the year trying to, Can I go get text messages?
I admire the business approach. I think it is wise. I know some people look at it as unethical, but I just consider it like that's good business. That's smart. You know, like if there was a way to have this good an ecosystem outside of Apple, then I would consider leaving it. But that's why I don't, is because I can't find an ecosystem. Outside of the walled garden is a desolate wasteland. It's just a bunch of nothing. So there's occasionally, you know, a little flower growing, or you know, kind of a cool looking cactus.
I was gonna say probably not on the flower spectrum outside of the walled garden. There, I mean, you might be lucky like a dandelion or something.
Yeah. So the walled garden is nice. It's got a fountain. It's got water. It's got
apple trees.
Apples.
Plenty of apple trees.
A Macintosh. You know, you've got everything you like in there. And then you go out, and it's mostly a wasteland. But occasionally, you find like a prickly pear cactus. That's like your Z Fold or your Z Flip, or you find a little cool Asus Zen book with a huge touch bar area, and you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. Or the Surface with a tablet that, you know, flips all the way in.
Microsoft have been shoving that thing in my face so hard. I want to legitimately see how much money they're spending to shove that ugly computer in my face. It is so funny.
Just the one with the screen above the keyboard?
No, it's the one that has the screen that detaches, and it's like the...
Oh, right.
It's like gotcha. The double trunk laptop with the flexible screen or whatever. It's so dumb.
Yeah, there's some impressive hardware I've stumbled upon. Like, for me, the prickly pear cactus would be the Surface Studio. Mm. Whenever I see that, I'm like, that's kind of cool. I like the idea of giant tablet that's also a really pretty clean desktop.
Imagine all those fingerprints, though.
That's true. It would be very fingerprinty. But I would just love it if it was Apple-fied, basically. Throw some Apple silicon in that base and then make it run Mac OS and iPad OS.
You want your prickly pear cactus and your Macintosh.
I want to bring the prickly pear cactus to the garden, but it's too heavy. I can't.
No, it's too prickly.
That's the end of my extreme analogy here. But I think it's a wise practice because I actually had a friend that bought a new car that he really liked, but it only had CarPlay. Unfortunately, it wasn't a Tesla because it had CarPlay.
So then it's not a new car.
Well,
it's an ice
new
car.
To him, I suppose, but it was not his old car, but he got a vehicle that only had CarPlay and he had an Android. Oh. So instead of trying to find a different car that had Android Auto, he just bought an iPhone because to him, that's a much smaller expense than the entire vehicle. And he told me, he was like, I don't really like iOS or the iPhone, but I want it to work with my car. So I bought an iPhone. And I was like, okay. I mean, there's your ecosystem
will get you somehow, but that's surprising. Uh-huh. That is surprising.
I don't think that's a common one. But yeah, I was kind of shocked to hear that. I was like, because I knew him from the past of being more of a Android guy who didn't really care for iPhones. And when he was like, pulled out an iPhone, I was like, oh, you got an iPhone now. Why'd you do that? He's like, my car. That's the only reason. All right. Whatever it takes. But there's less and less exciting things happening with Apple by the day. You know what does excite me, though?
Starship.
The new Starlink terminal.
Ah,
did you check it out?
Yes, I have seen all of the YouTubes about that. That is so cool. I am
Dirty Tesla got his.
Yes.
Check out Dirty Tesla's video. The box is so tiny. I don't know if you saw the unboxing, but
I did. I watched that video you sent. Yeah.
It's like you could easily throw that in a backpack, probably. Well, it might be a little bigger than I'm thinking, but you could.
12 inches by 24 inches, I think, is the panel.
Yeah, 2 feet by
1 foot.
13 or something. But you could fit it in some luggage fairly easily, which excites me because that's what I think long-term is going to be exciting about Starlink is just being able to pack it wherever, take it in the car. And the box mine came in is right off camera here, but it's enormous. It's like probably 3 feet tall.
And is it bigger than your iMac Pro box?
It's close. If you've ever looked at a 27-inch iMac box, it's first of all, it's not a trapezoid. It's a perfect square. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if anything, it's a little bigger. It's probably even bigger than an iMac box. So taking that on a trip or on a plane is going to be quite a process. Yeah. If you ever wanted to travel with your Starlink. But I love how tiny that new setup is. And at least from his unboxing, I don't see the black box anymore. The big brick.
Yeah. So it looks like the production units don't have a PoE injector. And it's kind of surprising to me. But yeah, it's all running through the router, which I know that people like Ethernet, and I need to be careful.
They do.
But yeah, people love their Ethernet. And the fact that it is not integrated into the Wi-Fi router anymore is disappointing to some people.
That's true. I can understand why. But and, I also and, understand...
And me myself and my dongles, I'm like, hey, dongle away, dude. Come on.
Right. They did sell an adapter or whatever to add Ethernet to it, but the fact that it's not default anymore, I understand the customer's frustration, and I also understand Starlink's decision, because by their logic, they're like, we need to get the price on these things down because we need to be as profitable as possible. Mm-hmm. And we have a huge backlog of orders. So we know if you've been waiting on your Starlink order for a year or however long it's been, you're going to pay the, how much is it, 20 or 50 bucks for the adapter?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, I don't actually pay for it. The cost of the adapter, but it is separate.
Whatever the price is.
$800. Wow.
if they need the adapter that bad, they'll take it. And also Starlink is probably going to a bunch of people who probably don't need it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That are just like, I want to watch Netflix in the woods, you know? So those people are like, I plug it in and it starts working. So I'm happy. You know, I connect everything wirelessly and, there may be some people out there that want the Ethernet option, but I'm okay with the concept of that not being a default thing, at least for now, while they're in the ramping phase and like startup phase of like, we need to get as many customers as possible. And I was also shocked to see how small the dish is. Like, I saw pictures of it, but once I saw Chris actually handling it, I was like, that thing looks like a toy. It's so little.
Yeah, it is. It's surprisingly light too. I think it's only like under 10 pounds. It's not that heavy.
Like, and the whole dish is powered by one micro USB port.
Yeah, it's a proprietary. It's not a standard micro USB port, but it is the same shape as a micro USB port. But it's pulling like 35 or 50 watts.
Wow,
is a lot.
That's quite an engineering experience. If anyone's forgotten, if you go back and watch my Starlink unboxing and look at how big that box is, and now look at Dirty Tesla's unboxing and how small that box is, they found a way to compact that entire product and all of the services and all of the benefits other than the Ethernet port all into a box like a fraction of the size, which that's what engineers are good at, I guess, but when they do it, it's impressive, especially when it's something we all are going to see more frequently, like more regularly use. How's your internet, Nick? Do you need Starlink where you are, or is it okay?
The home internet is fine, I guess. I pay for Charter Spectrum, I think. They have, it's just a coax cable that goes into my building, and it's not great. It's 400 down and like 40 up on a good day, but typically I get like 200 down and like 20 up, which
sounds like Starlink.
Pretty much like Starlink.
It's about the same,
but it's way more expensive than Starlink. And it's like 100.
How much is it a month?
150, 49 plus like taxes. And so it's it's their highest tier or whatever. Like they're almost gigabit speed, 400 megabits a second. Woo! Look how cool
almost
this
gigabit,
is.
As in less than half.
Less than half. It's like, yeah, no, dude, not at all.
Do you have a reservation? I forgot.
I have multiple reservations. Yeah. So the one where I used to live, it's I still have family that lives there, and so I've kept that reservation, and that one used to be end of 2021, and I was getting pretty excited because the second half of 2021 was what that said, and just a couple days ago I checked, and it's now beginning, or it said 2022. Let me look up exactly what it said there.
Okay.
Because Mike and I were
Mike's order got delayed as well. He was really pumped because his was saying end of 2021.
Yeah,
mine says now it's saying that's what it said as well.
Which, you know, we weren't super north, and I know lots of people who are farther north are. You know, that's how it works. And also, I have one down here in South Texas, and that is literally going to be the last human in the United States to get one for my residence. But we'll see at SpaceX what we can get there, because internet is very bad at SpaceX. Which is really funny, considering, you know, we run most of our robot cameras 24/7, and we have all this internet uplink availability. And it's like, we want Starlink, right? Like, we want to use Starlink on these robot cameras because it'll be, you know, it's SpaceX. But what's really funny is the ground station is literally in Starbase. So we would be from like 500 feet away beaming internet all the way up to 500 kilometers in low Earth orbit, and beaming it right back down, right 500 back down. Feet next to us to the fiber, you know, ground station, and I'm just like, just run a cable. How hard is this?
Yeah, just a big internet pogo stick.
Exactly.
It's right back next to itself.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's Starlink for you. I'm most excited that like we're finally out of beta and we can start doing these V4 satellites. We can start getting the laser network built out. We can start shipping terminals to customers, hopefully profitably, in a shorter amount of time. I know. I honestly don't know why they haven't bumped up the unit price. Like if they're saying, you know, the old ones were $1,500 and we sell them for $500. Yeah, that's cheap. Cheap for the consumer, you know, they're losing a lot of money on that.
Sure.
They have to wait like a couple of years to get their money back before you even count in the internet cost of the satellites.
Right. And all those launches. Yeah,
exactly. All those launches aren't free either. But yeah, so it's like they cut the material costs in half with the new Starlink. Let's call it that. I think it's, you know, somewhere around $800 or so. And they're still selling
that's pretty
for
good.
$499, right? Plus the $100 deposit. So it's like, well, you're still losing money on that. Why don't they just, you know, instead of losing money, why don't they start making a profit? Because at this point, they're in the exact same problem as Tesla. They have no supply.
There's
and they
so
have
much
plenty
demand.
Of demand.
Yeah.
So they could literally charge $1,500 for these terminals and use that as a method to help alleviate demand in some regards, but also just, you know, become profitable. And I know that they're not publicly traded as of yet. I know they do want to do an IPO. It sounds like even in 2022, maybe mid to late 2022.
I've heard that.
We'll see if that happens. But so right now, it doesn't really matter whether or not they're profitable or not, because, you know, SpaceX is privately funded by, you know, everyone who can call up their investor and say buy SpaceX, because we know that's going to Mars, at least. Maybe not to the moon, but to Mars.
Yeah. Right.
Stock price joke there for you Doge fans.
They're production constrained, though.
Exactly,
you're right.
Yeah.
Just like
and
Tesla.
They legitimately mentioned chip shortages in their press release, right? And so it's like they're not. They can charge whatever they want, like $2,000 for one of these terminals. Yeah, it would be.
They could have like priority shipping.
Yeah,
you know,
Five like, grand for priority delivery. Like, come on.
Yeah,
like,
who's building these things? And yeah. if you're willing to front the cash, we'll ship it to you first. You know, exactly. It could be like a, yeah. I'm in no rush, but please send me one list mm-hmm. or send us, yeah, $2,000 or $5,000 and we'll ship it to you within the next month.
I know plenty
month.
Of people who would buy dozens of Starlinks at any price.
yeah.
Like,
that'd be interesting.
There.
That's actually a really good idea. I haven't thought about that.
It wouldn't be very fair, I guess, when you think about how like we're used to society working as like having a price and then everyone's in the same queue. And you know, that's how it works with iPhones. Imagine if iPhones were sold this way, where it was like, we have, you know, only this many iPhone 10s. And so
that's
we'll
true.
Start a bid. The actual price is $1,000. You can stand in that queue whenever we get around to it. Or... Uh-huh. You can bid as much money as you want, and the highest bidder gets it first. Like,
true. So they're trying to keep it fair, basically.
Yeah, I would they're say this is a fair system. You know, a flat price and a queue is
yeah.
very fair. You know, everyone. Uh-huh. It's all just in you know how fast you got in the queue, and you pay all pay the same amount. But mm-hmm. I don't think that their problem right now is needing to keep the price down. Like, eventually, yes, when they're shipping terminals out to the whole world to get internet into all of the places of the world that's never had internet, yes, cheap terminals, extremely important there. I'd say subsidize them. You know, spend, take the extra money that you made from the higher price terminals in the U.S. and put them into, you know, saving money, like subsidize the price of the old terminal, the new terminals in different areas, you know? So being able to subsidize that price would be pretty important. But anyway, yeah, lots of fun.
Yeah. I think if production capacity is resolved, that fixes a lot because now you can say, all right, we've got too many of these terminals. Now let's lower our prices, mm-hmm. and I could see that happening in the future, but given how many people have freaking ordered the thing and how long people are waiting, man, it's going to be a while. I'm pretty confident, so that's why it makes me laugh whenever people say, man, Starlink's too expensive, it's $100 a month. I'm like, well, there's still a huge list of people willing to pay that because they're in an area where there's nothing better. But it's exciting to think about how much better the service is going to be as more and more satellites are deployed, and now how the costs are dropping for the kits, and hopefully they can ramp those kits faster. Like, do you think Starlink will become a monopoly?
Ooh, a monopoly in the satellite-based internet? Yes. Monopoly with ground-based providers? No. I think Starlink is never going to be able to compete in any kind of density area, not just, mm-hmm. you know, big urban cities and not just the, you know, not just Manhattan, not just the center of LA,
yeah.
but even like where, you know, you have like an apartment building that has a bunch of people, like that's, it's going to be way cheaper and you're going to way better internet just having the company, the monopoly company, run a physical line into the building. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely gonna be a ton of use for it, but anything more dense than like a neighborhood is like, I think a neighborhood is just about like the limit of Starlink's density. Just to, you know, your mm-hmm. standard like neighborhood, because there is enough space in the neighborhood where, you know, you wouldn't have 80,000 people in one square mile or whatever, but there's also enough competition and like there are already cables run and stuff, but those typically aren't maintained very well because a neighborhood is a little bit more difficult to maintain than a high density, you know, apartment block. However, satellite based internet, yeah, Starlink is going to smoke any competition that tries because mm-hmm. it's literally make a different tech comparison here. It's like Apple Watch versus Fitbit on the iPhone, right? Like,
yeah,
Apple owns Apple Watch and iPhone. SpaceX owns mm-hmm. the launch system and the whole user
satellites.
Experience.
Yeah.
The satellites, the operation of the satellites, the whole user experience. It's this uh-huh. one unified ecosystem, which I cannot wait to join the SpaceX ecosystem. Like, I mean, I'm pretty much just going to be 100% SpaceX at this point. I work there, I eat there, I dream about there, I just have my internet there.
It's all in the sky.
It's all just here. But yeah, I don't see HughesNet or any of the other satellite internet competition even surviving. Like,
yeah,
there's probably going to be a few stragglers that will kind of eke along. Probably not HughesNet because they're already on financial rough ground at the moment. But like the satellite phone industry is probably going to stick around for quite a while bit longer because at least the way the current Starlinks are set up, you're not really going to be able to access them with a radio small enough to fit on a portable device. So those huge, you know, antennaed satellite phones are probably going to be around for a little while. And those do have some data links, but all the aircraft, all the ships, all the, you know, rural people, everyone,
airplanes.
Yeah. Like all of that is going to be on Starlink and it's going to be unstoppable. And it's going to be so cool because once they build out that laser network grid, which they just did the first launch of that a couple weeks ago. So they're not, that's nowhere close to being done. They're basically having, they started the shell one, right? So that's been done. And that took what, 2.5 years to build out. Shell 2 with the lasers, the point-to-point lasers, that's going to take another 2 years to build out. And it's not going to be until that is built out that you truly have gigabit speeds anywhere in the world because it's going to blow everybody's mind.
Yeah, low latency, moves faster in a vacuum. But that makes me wonder, like, because I don't actually know this. That's why I'm asking about it. But, like, the infrastructure costs, especially once Starship gets operational and you're able to deploy hundreds of satellites instead of a few dozen, then can the... Let's assume in the future with all the laser sats, they can surpass a gigabit, right? They have really fast, low latency internet anywhere on the planet. Can the price of Starlink theoretically start beating that of the landline options for a lot of residential areas, even if you were in a fairly dense area?
I mean, I think pricing wise, they've pretty much already beat it. I mean, the cost to...
They're beating it for me, and I have Comcast.
Exactly, yeah. So the cost, I think a lot of that is currently subsidized. I can't imagine the actual cost per, you know, 10,000 people of all this is actually $100 a month. But I think $100 a month is a good number that they'll probably keep. I don't know. We'll see how, you know, inflation and all that goes. But I think after Starship comes online, the problem isn't getting more satellites into orbit. Initially, yes, that's the problem. You need to get a lot of mass to orbit. You have to have all these little Starlinks built out. But after they're built out, they're kind of just there. And yeah, you need to replace them. You know, they'll go bad. They'll deorbit.
Sure.
You know, you'll get a new faster radio that you want to stick up there. So there's going to be like that maintenance part of it. And yeah, Starship's definitely going to help with that. I'd imagine they could handle all of their needs with one dedicated Starship and booster.
The Starlink ship.
It's the Starlink ship, exactly. And that's literally all it does. You know, launches every couple weeks, 400 more of them. And that'll keep
That's a cool idea. I didn't think about that.
The Starlink ship.
Just one ship just for all of Starlink.
SS Starlink.
Yeah. That's cool.
But
yeah, once that's all taken care of.
Yeah, once it's taken care of, it's kind of done. And, you know, with the Crew Dragon, they're working on adding an internet connection via Starlink on the Crew Dragon. So that when you're in low Earth orbit on one of SpaceX's spacecraft, you can access the Starlink network. After they do Starlink around the Earth, you betcha they have plans for the Moon and Mars to get Starlink all over that. Now, having Starlink and Mars is not going to help with the Earth to Martian communication speed.
Sure.
But it will help with Martian to Martian communication, where you can even get really accurate, basically GPS data or Martian positioning system data. Wouldn't be quite as accurate as the atomic clocks that we use for our current stuff now. But even if you just had Starlink, you could get pretty accurate, you know, location data on Mars, which currently is a big problem. You know, navigation on Mars. We might have the maps built out, but finding out where you are is not very easy without without
all
the satellites.
And I think about in space how they don't have weather storms, they don't have car crashes, all things that impact landline internet.
True.
You could have solar storms and space debris, but I think those are less common. than some drunk guy that drives into a ask the Russians. Blow that piece of junk out of the sky.
You know what we haven't had in about a decade?
Yeah.
A big cloud of orbiting debris that we can't track.
Right. Well, I mean, that will happen, I'm sure. Yeah. But simultaneously, how often does some drunk guy crash into a telephone pole and knock out?
My power went out last night for like an hour. I mean,
there you go.
I mean, that's not internet, but it's the same pole, I'm sure.
Like, what are the maintenance fees of that relative to a satellite system to the point that I'm not saying, you know, because there's people all out there that are like, I get 10 gigabits for $2 a month where I live. And I'm not talking about those areas.
Good
I
job,
just mean
South Korea. Please remind me how good your internet speeds are.
If the operating costs keep going down, I could see a point where Starlink gets so affordable that even in places where you have fiber, it starts becoming like debatable. Like
the real constraint there is the bandwidth per square kilometer of surface area.
Yeah,
and so if you have 10 people in a square kilometer that want to utilize Starlink, they're all going to be sharing the same Starlink satellite, basically.
That's true.
And if you have, say, 10 gigabits a second of throughput on that Starlink terminal, then those 10 users are going to experience 1 gigabit a second, theoretically, of speed. But if you have, instead of 10 people in that one square kilometer, you have 300 people in that one square kilometer, you'll need a lot more throughput on each satellite, which would increase the price. Part of the beauty of the Starlink satellite system, the Starlink internet connection system, is each Starlink satellite costs less than $250,000 to make. That is unheard of in the aerospace industry.
Wow.
Most of these satellites cost multi-billion dollars.
Yeah.
Some of them,
I did not know it was that cheap.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
$250,000. But no, they launch them, 60 at a time. And so they have, but they're,
that's like a house.
it's extremely cheap satellite wise. And they're, there's not much to them to begin with. It's like a couple panel antennas, a battery, a small little Krypton thruster, and a solar panel.
Yeah.
Like, there's not much to them. And the great thing is they're launching 60 up at a time. So if two or three are bad out of the batch, which has happened, then they just deorbit those and replace them later because they're cheap. It's like the Happy Meal toys. I got plenty of them.
It's the Model 3 of satellites.
Pretty much.
But do you think, like, my thought process of navigating that, because I have this Starlink master plan in my head that they're going to take over the world. The next Comcast. Obvious. We just don't know it yet.
The Tesla bots are going to be marching around enforcing Elon Musk's wishes on everyone and the model.
Yeah.
The red eyeballs. Oh, gosh, that'd be creepy.
Yeah, it's going to be like iRobot. But I pictured if you are in a densely populated area, then they could say, just like the 5G home internet stuff, you just say, is Starlink in my area? And they say, yes, to this speed, which we will charge this much for. So if you are in a place where, because this is assuming in the future they get the cost of the terminal down and all that.
Yeah.
And at this point, just having a paying customer is the goal. It doesn't matter if they're paying $100 a month or $30 a month, as long as they have recurring revenue. So they get to that point where it's like, okay, yes, we can offer it in your area, but it's only this fast and it only costs this much. But if the infrastructure for the satellites are already present and you just want to make sure each satellite is basically raking in an X amount of dough, then you could start offering fairly cheap internet that's still relatively fast, that I think could actually start competing with a lot of landlines. But I've heard SpaceX employees say they want Starlink to cost the same price everywhere, which I don't know why. I've just heard them say that, but I think there's advantages to perhaps
portability,
fluctuating the price.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, having a fluctuating price would be nice on the consumer side, because then you could price out certain areas. You'd be like, yeah, sure, you can get Starlink in Manhattan. It'd be $800 a month, though, and you're going to get this much speed. And if someone's like, well, I have Comcast for most of my stuff, but I have a business where, like, I can't be without internet, so if Comcast goes down, I need to have another app, then maybe that's worth it to them. At which point, good for SpaceX for getting $800 a month. But you can't offer in Manhattan $100 a month, most people don't have a roof, so that might be difficult
too.
But for the most part, in those densely populated areas, it it will be more challenging for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they could get there. And I wouldn't be surprised if people do start making that, like, okay, it's going to be a little bit slower, but it's going to be slightly cheaper than Comcast or whatever. And then I, just like you, won't have to deal with Comcast anymore, and I'm funding the future of Mars. Yeah, I think there's
a ton of reasons to compromise on internet performance so you don't have to deal with a certain provider. I'm certainly in that boat, and I know many people that are. That are like, okay, it may not be as fast as this, but I'm so sick of the ads for TV channels and the you have to subscribe to this cable TV plan along with the internet plan type business model, which makes me wonder, like, when they're pushing cable so hard and they're pushing all these third-party TV channels so hard, it's like, how profitable is this business if they're having to shove all this other crap down my throat along the way, whereas Starlink doesn't have to.
Oh, this was perfect. A letter I received from Spectrum a couple days ago.
Yeah, don't dox yourself.
I think I'm covering up the right things. It says, important notice, open immediately.
I'm like, oh, I bet it's an ad.
It is literally
an ad. I get those a lot.
It is literally an advertisement.
I get letters all the time that say important information, you know, open right away. And it's just like, you could subscribe to this thing.
For only $34.99 a month, you could have TV. Ooh. I don't care.
See, to me, that screams desperation.
It's literally the definition of desperation.
That means they're not super heavy on profit margins right now. And if someone comes in with decent internet for cheaper or around the same price, I could see that. I know Elon doesn't talk about it being a threat to landline, but I think it could be long term. Like,
your Comcast lost a customer.
Yeah, proudly lost a Comcast customer. I'm so happy I'm not with them anymore. I'll put up with all the occasional frame drops just for no Comcast anymore. And I know I'm not alone in that regard. So
the question is, there will always be demand in cities for Starlink, for another option, for not being a part of a monopoly. But yes, will there be capacity to support that? I don't think there will be anytime soon.
Okay.
You know, I mean, they'd have to fundamentally change how this all works. You know, it would probably honestly be easier for SpaceX in a highly densely populated area to put up like LTE type towers and then have, you know, people connect that way, you know, still wirelessly, but, you know, be able to service, you know, a mile or two in radius instead of satellite based. And I don't think they would do that, but I think that would be a more efficient way to compete with the cable provider in their home turf, you know, on the, you know, highly urbanized areas. But I don't know.
I'm trying to think of, like, we have around 2,000 Starlink satellites in orbit now, right?
3,050-ish, actually.
Oh, 3,000.
3,110, I think, because they just did another 60 a few days ago.
If we're around 3,000 with, say, close to 150,000 customers on the platform right now, and I've heard filings that say they want to go well over 10,000 satellites.
Yep.
That equates to what? Like 50,000 users per 1,000 satellites or something like that?
I
would love to do the math, but my iPad doesn't have a calculator.
Dang it!
Let me see. If they want to get to... I remember at some point seeing like 40,000 satellites or something crazy like that. But if we had like 12,000 satellites at 50,000 people per satellite, per 1,000, that would be 600,000. They could, or 6 million. I still see somewhere between the addressable 6, market.
6,000 and 6 million, one between there.
It's somewhere in there. I'm a dropout. But still, like, I'm just trying to estimate.
I have an accounting degree. This is worse. An
accounting degree, by the way. But I'm just trying to visualize, like, what their max capacity could be before you start having the
Kessler. I think the V2 satellites are going to help out a lot, because currently all of the network traffic has to go up and then right back down. But being able to distribute that downward traffic to its actual destination point over the network will help quite a bit.
And that's fair.
Yeah, I think they have permission for up to 44,000 satellites at the moment, and I don't see why they couldn't get more permission. And having 44,000 satellites is absolutely insane. Like, that's like three times the number of satellites that we've ever launched as humanity, I'm pretty sure, if I'm recalling correctly. It's close. It's a lot.
I think it's more. Yeah.
Yeah, no, like, it's three times. I think it's like close to three times as many. 44,000 satellites would be three times as many satellites as humanity has ever launched into orbit.
Yeah, that would be in the millions of paying customers for sure.
Which they need. I mean, they could very easily have millions of customers. Very easily. Each paying $100 a month. And all this cost is very upfront, right? After you have the satellites in orbit, pretty much automated at that point. Like, it's
they don't need all gas. Of your money.
Yeah. They don't need gas. They don't need electricity because the sun. You know,
they have
a
solar panel.
It's pretty much all the money is in the engineering development time, the building time, and then the launch cost. After that is pretty much smooth sailing. So
all of which are dropping.
Exactly, right? And so assuming they are able to make it to the point where, you know, they have the SS Starship or SS Starlink Starship bringing 400 Starlinks at a time a couple times a month, and just that real low maintenance cost of the network, once it's all built out, it is going to be the biggest money maker on planet Earth. Like, I promise you. Like,
not Dogecoin?
I don't know about that. I'm pretty sure Starlink is going to be the best deal.
Because it looks like the stock market's having a Black Friday sale right now.
Oh, I haven't been on the stock market recently.
Everything was red this morning. I haven't looked since we started recording. But I think they might get charged as being a monopoly someday. I think it's very likely in my view. Just because, in my view, like, most ISPs have monopolies in most of the areas where you, like, can't use any other home internet. Yeah. It's kind of like a monopoly with some terms and conditions of, like, okay, you can only get a certain provider at this location, and that provider's treating you like crap, and they're charging whatever they want. That was the situation I was in. And I hope that never becomes Starlink, but, you know, I expect Starlink to be a very long-term ISP, so one day it might have poor leadership or bad management, and that could be something the government steps in on. Right? Impossible. People are corrupt. But no,
Elon is pure in all of his ways.
So you're saying we should all invest in Starlink, and this is financial advice, right?
This is financial advice to you, the viewer watching this. Nick Answeeney, a qualified professional accountant, is recommending that you do your own financial research and not listen to me.
Ooh, there's our financial advice. Do your own research. Mm-hmm. Don't listen to us.
Good financial advice.
Before we wrap up, I need your opinion on something. It's back to the Apple subject, so you guys can calm down, Apple? Relax. But I did the thing no one said I should do, which is worry about my MacBook battery. Because it was plugged in for like a week, and I had seen Randy tell me that, you know, just leave it plugged in all the time. Eventually the battery charging feature will kick in and it'll start pulling power just from the outlet, and it'll let the battery drain down. And he showed me screenshots of his MacBook Air doing that, except it was drowning down to like 13%, 10%. Mm-hmm. And it was still pulling power just from the wall and not charging the battery. And I was like, well, that's getting the battery kind of low to the point of it's not great for the lithium long term.
Yeah.
Of like sub 20%, which is not as healthy. And my MacBook was not doing that. It was, even at 100% for like days, it was still showing the charge icon, and it said the power source was from the wall, but it was keeping the battery at 100% all day, every day. And everyone told me, it's fine, don't worry about it, you know, trust Apple, their battery management system will take care of it. And I was like, I'm overall fine. I know it'll last years and years, but I just want to know if there's any tiny change I can make that'll preserve it just a tiny bit more.
Yeah.
And I found someone on Twitter, shout out to that person. Shout out to whoever they were, said, if you're leaving it plugged in all day, every day, and I've been using it at high power mode, you should use a charge limiter. So they recommended this third-party app called Al Dente, and it basically does exactly what I wanted that Teslas do, where you can put in a percentage and say, charge to this amount, and then keep it there, and then pull all your power from the wall. So it's a free program with like a paid pro option. They're not a sponsor. They didn't reach out to me at all. This is just someone on Twitter said, try Al Dente. And I was like, I knew some kind of program like this had to exist because it makes too much sense. But it's working pretty well so far. Basically, I installed this program and I set, because the battery life on my MacBook is so good and it's been plugged in for weeks, I set the charge limit to 60. So it's not, you know, it's not high in the 90s, which isn't great, or low in the 10s, but it's now the power outlet. All the power is coming from the wall, and the battery's not fluctuating all over the place, because when I was trying to teach the optimized battery charging feature on my Mac, like, hey, don't leave it at 100% all the time, it basically was like, okay, so I'll leave it at 100% all the time. And I unplugged it and let it drain and plugged it back in, and it was like, I'll stop at 80, but I'll bring it to 100 tonight. And I was like, you don't need to bring it to 100 tonight. Just keep it at 80 indefinitely. But there was no setting. There's no way for macOS to be like, hey, calm down. The battery's fine. I'm not going anywhere. And of course, Al Dente, if you are planning a trip or something, you can just turn off the charge limiter and it'll go up to 100. So I can still do that, but basically, it's keep it at 60 unless I tell you otherwise, which is perfect for my use case. And I want to know if you think this is a bad idea. Do you think I'm putting too much trust into Al Dente?
I think it is a very bad idea because you're way too concerned about this.
I am too concerned.
I just looked at my far superior 13-inch MacBook Pro with Touch Bar. I am sitting at 77 cycles over, I don't know, half a year of owning it, I guess. I guess I bought it in the late spring, early summer. Yeah, so 77 cycles. It's probably that averages out to probably about a cycle every other day. My maximum capacity is at 90%, so that's the battery health is at 90%, which means that I have dropped 10% in 77 cycles, and that's honestly worse than I was expecting. However, I obviously have a really weird lifestyle where I do have the optimized battery charging turned on here in the system preferences.
Do you leave it plugged in a lot, or is it on it normal cycles?
It can't figure out my cycle, honestly. So when I'm at home, you know, I plug it in and it charges.
It should use the cycles app on the watch. It could understand.
And there's the offensive joke of the day, everyone. Fill up your bingo cards. Sorry, have a good one. We'll see you next time. No.
Is that offensive?
I don't know. It could be. I'm sure someone.
I'm talking about the workout cycle.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Got a cycling on the Apple Watch. Okay, got it.
Outdoor cycle. It's right
outdoor
there.
Outdoor cycle. So I have optimized battery charging turned on, but it always juices it up to 100% every time I plug it in. Like, I think it just hasn't figured out. It figured out that I don't have a schedule. And so it's like the schedule
that's
is
where
if you
I
plug
am too.
In, charge up now. And which is the case. A lot of times, you know, I'll be at work or whatever and I just need to top it off real quick because, you know, I'm uploading or editing or whatever. And it's just like, I need the power now, and I'll plug it in and it'll juice up. And 90% battery health over like 6 months is not good. So I'm sure I probably could be taking care of this a little bit better. However, I have come to the terms that this computer is going to last me just a little bit over a year, and between the dust and the battery and, you know, need that M1
that's
Pro
a work
chip
computer.
On a beautiful iMac or something that's not the ugly computer. I will be upgrading this at some point. So I'm not overly concerned about it, but yeah, it is like, maybe I should be concerned about it like Drew. However, I don't think I could be. Like, if I charge it up to 80%, if I, you know, got the Al Dente app, maybe in 60% or whatever, I would have to charge it way more frequently because I don't live on a power adapter. My office is not a desk, and I'm always moving around. So it's unfortunate, but I think you're doing the thing that works best for your use case, and I think I am doing it as well, even though.
So you don't think it's a bad thing to put battery management in control of a third party?
Not if Apple isn't doing it the way you want it. I mean, that's kind of why the third parties are there. If you have the ability to, you know, with macOS, obviously iOS doesn't give you that level of third party control, but macOS does still for some reason. I don't see why you wouldn't do that, especially because Apple is really good about being really simple and doing things that your grandma can understand. Like, just plug your phone in and your phone will figure out how to charge.
Right.
Like, shout out to all those people who had to do tech service yesterday. That was fun.
That's right.
Grandma's.
I did actually. But, you know, yeah, I saw Marquez tweet about that.
Yep.
And I was like, here we go. It's real.
That's it. But anyway, like, that's what Apple's good at, right? Like, just the real simple, transparent, you know, helpful tools. But for you and I who like geek out about this stuff and we're like looking up our battery cycles and, you know, figuring out.
I have 12 cycles.
You have 12 cycles. Oh my gosh, Drew. That is 12 more than it came with. You have got to take care of that battery more. Take more care of the battery.
Yes.
But if you know what you're doing, all I'd say, if you know what you're doing, third party, go for it. But, you know, use it at your own risk.
Yeah. I'm only worried about it on this because it's the most expensive device with a battery I've ever bought. So I'm slightly more concerned about it than an iPhone or an iPad, which
it's
I've spent.
It's the most expensive thing without a door and windows that you've bought.
Possibly. I think it's...
Because it's more expensive than your iMac Pro, and your iMac Pro is more expensive than your car, right?
The MacBook Pro technically costs less because of the cashback, so...
Oh, okay.
It's up for debate. If we don't count cashback, it's the most expensive... It's more than the iMac Pro, but if we count cash back, it's not the most. But sure.
All right.
Let's just go ahead and say it's the most expensive thing I've bought that didn't come with land. so I'm a slightly more concerned about this battery compared to all the others. Yeah. My iPad battery, I've never once cared about. I abuse it every day. I also use my iPad in lots of places. Like, I've discovered... The use case for me to keep using it is like when we want to watch something in bed because we're tired and we just want to lay down. The iPad is so much lighter compared to this giant MacBook Pro, which has a nice display, but it's a big like, okay, let's take it to the bedroom now. Whoa. But the iPad's just good for the like sitting around, lounging, general media consumption, not really productivity-based stuff, which means the MacBook sits here a lot. And I'm still glad I got a MacBook because I did take it on our last trip. And it's nice to have something that's mobile that's really powerful. But, like, I do plan on owning this thing for 5+ years.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was an iPhone that I spent a grand on, I don't care. Optimized battery charging can do its thing. It's wrong most of the time. It tries to guess my schedule, but just like you, my schedule changes a lot, and it's having a hard time predicting it. And yes, that's in my iOS 16 wish list. I would like an option to say, charge to 80 unless I tell you otherwise. You know, if I need you to go up to 100, I'll tell you, but don't just assume I need it full charge every day. Same thing because... Justifiably, my wife uses my old 2017 iPad Pro and an iPhone SE. She does not want two separate lightning chargers.
No.
So she has one iPad Pro charging brick that she also charges her phone with. And she kind of leapfrogs the device. So the battery health on her SE went down much faster than it probably should have because she kept plugging it into a 20-watt brick every night. Mm-hmm. And she has optimized charging turned on and whatnot, but I checked the battery health and I was like, man, this is... I think it was at like 90 or 89%, and it's not that old. So if there was a way... And I looked in the battery settings, and it's always like, you know, it gets down to 8% at 9 o'clock, and it's like, okay, full charge, whee! So it... Fast charges all the way to 80 and then stops until the morning and goes to 100. But I was like, if there was a way to tell it slow charge, you know, take longer than 5 watts if you need to, you know, take as slow as you want, because that's a battery that's, you know, almost 2 years old and she's already noticing the degradation. Yeah. And I don't think it's reasonable for everyone to just be like, well, you should have used a slow brick with it. It's like, well, the slow brick's not going to charge her iPad. She wants one charger for both these devices. So I think that would be a wise feature for them to add just for longevity's sake. And I'm glad Al Dente exists because it seems to be doing exactly what I want macOS to do. And it didn't require an account or an email or anything. It just sits up in my menu bar. And it has an option for you to discharge even when you're connected to power.
Oh, really?
So if you're like, nice. I want the battery to go down, you just hit discharge and it switches to the battery even if something's plugged in. And if I do connect this to a monitor and it ends up being docked all the time, I do think that would be useful. So when I go on a trip, I'll just hit the top up button and it'll just charge it back up. And I can use as little cycles as possible, which is the goal. So... I'm glad you don't think it's a bad idea.
last thought, and then we do have to go here. But yeah. What if this optimized battery charging is actually just a placebo?
It's a pretty bad placebo if it is, but I've considered that. Like, I think someone was telling me that even though it says it's at 100%, it's not really. Mm-hmm. It'll actually fluctuate between 90, 95, and 100. But to me, that breaks more into the theoretical. I haven't seen many concrete evidence of that. And also, even if it's true that it does fluctuate between 90 and 100, that's still not great for long-term storing of a battery. Because if I'm using my MacBook just through the wall power, and I'm basically storing a battery right now. There happens to be a battery in my laptop, but it's not being used. It's just kind of sitting in there. And if it's going to be stored there for weeks on end, I would rather it be at a very healthy middle ground, you know, below 80 but above 20% charge. And then seeing Randy's screenshot of it go below 20 and it's at like 10 or 13%. But I'm powered off the wall, it doesn't matter. I don't know what optimized charging is doing in the background, but I don't want it fluctuating all that much. Even if this results in 1 month extra of usable time with the MacBook 7 years from now, I know that the differences I'm getting hung up on probably make very little impact on the actual usability. Like, I could probably just leave it at 100 all the time and it'd be fine, but this was a subject that was interesting to me. And I also think it's cool that people came up with applications that do exactly what I'm using. So I want to support that and show that I'm going to try it for the extended ownership of my MacBook and see how it does and see if it does make a difference that we can compare to. Because we have lots of people that leave it plugged in 24/7 and we have data on that. But I want to get some long-term data on what happens if you just leave the battery right in the middle. Long term. So that's exciting to me, but it's kind of nice. It's like my Mac has the Tesla operating system. It's like trip daily, you know.
Yeah,
the little graphs,
juice it up. You just need an animation of a charging Tesla instead of a battery prong and a power lightning bolt.
Because if I ever take a trip that's like months as well, and I leave the MacBook plugged in during the trip for whatever reason, I'll probably
just won't need to bring a charger. Me. The battery's going to do so well.
Yeah. I want to see, like, I want to set some kind of record for like lowest cycle count for oldest device. You know, it's like really, really old, but super low cycle. Be interesting. Anyway, well, do you have closing thoughts, Nick?
Yeah. Let's see. How did we used to close the old show? It was super, super awkward.
Whatever, leave a voicemail.
Leave a voicemail at the beep. Bye. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say, don't preserve your battery health because your MacBook sucks and I want it to die faster.
You know, I may not be considering getting one. Have a good week, guys. Bye.